don't have any like that.
Call the Tax Conference Committee to order.
Very nice.
We've got this. The League of Cities did a little bit of preliminary work for us, and they have identified kind of what order to take the cities that are here to talk about their local options. And so if we're not in the order that pleases you, take it up with the League. I'll save the sheet of paper to prove it. Madam Chair, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, can I just ask, you know, as I mentioned yesterday, I have an amendment to solve the local option sales tax issue for once and for all and just let everybody have them. Would you like us to discuss my amendment ahead so everyone can talk about what they think about that or at the end?
Why don't I just kind of summarize it?
Well, you haven't seen it.
Let me make a guess that we'd authorize communities to have local option sales taxes as long as they were willing to have an LGA offset.
No, that's not it.
Why don't we wait with it until we get through the list, then we can turn these mayors loose.
I think there's a number of ways to, if folks want to have these, to count revenue streams, either against LGA or in the equation within the LGA as it comes into the formula. And other House members have had the idea that you would require anybody with a local option to do like a fiscal disparity tax base sharing with all the surrounding communities. But I do think folks who want all these should think about this, that if we're going to go down this road, we're probably going to have to do these statewide, and we're going to have tax base sharing or have people lose their LGA as an offset or change the formula for LGA, because continuing to have these is counterproductive to the aids and credits system, and it's costing taxpayers more. And it does just what, you know, there's a strong correlation between sales tax base and property tax base, and the cities with the best property tax bases have the best sales tax bases, and so allowing these makes the wealthier cities relatively wealthier and the poorer cities relatively poorer. And I think everyone should know if we're going to keep doing these, we need to address this, and it may not, we need to make it fair. We've got some good information to share with you, Senator Bach, about all 50 states and what they do.
We have.
Would like folks to have it in this room.
Madam Chair, I'm. Let's get through these cities, and tomorrow I'd be happy to spend as much time discussing that as possible, because I do think, you know, when the Minnesota Miracle was created in 1971, when that legislation was passed, and they created the local government aid formula, they raised the sales tax by 1% and then redistributed that. Part of that money was redistributed back out through the local government aid formula. And maybe Representative Greiling is right. Maybe it's time for the second version of the Minnesota Miracle, and maybe it's more than education funding, just like the first one. Maybe it's also kind of taking another look at local government aid and local options. Might be more than an education committee discussion.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Chesky.
And I know you don't want to get into this now. I want to make it available to you and your conferees, though, and just set the leftovers out for the public. As we think about these, you know, of the 50 states, there's really 10 that do much equalization at all through aids and credits. Minnesota is one of those. And this graph will show you that. Of the 50 states, Wyoming, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, Arizona, Michigan, Wisconsin, Connecticut, and Minnesota have pretty good equalization programs, and they don't give cities sales tax authority, except one. That's Arizona. States either give everyone local options and they don't do equalization through LGA and CPA, or they do equalization and they don't do local option sales tax. And I think folks should look at the data here. We really don't want to be the outlier that's pulling the babies out of the river in funding LGA and county aid, and someone's upstream throwing them in, and that's the local option sales tax. These are counterproductive policies that are at odds with each other, and I just think we need to address them. And if I can ask the page just to set them on the table for folks who want to see this information, I understand the cities from their own perspective why they want them, but as state legislators, this is the exact wrong direction we should be moving. So, Mr. Chair, sorry, I'm done.
Senator Lori, Representative Pilkey.
Yeah.
Representative Lencheski has set the table for you. welcome to the Tax Conference Committee. And Council, where is, what page of the side-by-side again? Okay. Twenty-eight, down at the bottom, section 27. Who would like to start?
Well, Mr. Chair.
Sam Hilty, welcome to the Tax Conference Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I was trying to remember, sitting here, whether this was the sixth or the eighth time that I have had some version of this bill before the Tax Committee. And I would feel better about the situation if I could say that, by golly, in those 6 or 8 years, no other city has been granted the ability to bring this issue before its taxpayers. But I really don't think that's the case.
Right.
So maybe after 6 or 8 years, members, this would be Cloquet's turn. What we have before us is a simple proposal for a local option sales tax up to 0.5% of course, subject to the approval of the voters. I think one of the things that has been a problem in making that case for Cloquet in the past is that some members of the legislature, I wouldn't say that applies to any of the current members of the Tax Committee, but perhaps in the past some of them have been somewhat geographically challenged and seem to think that because of Cloquet's proximity to Duluth, that it's not truly a regional center that is bearing the burden for a whole area around it in terms of services provided. Mr. Chair, I'm sure that you're sufficiently familiar with the area to know that that is absolutely not the case. And that, for instance, I think in our entire legislative district that I share half of with Senator Laurie, people coming from our district going north to shop, to avail themselves of services such as a public library and other recreational opportunities that are afforded in Cloquet, don't go farther north than that. I would just ask members to keep that in mind. But Senator Laurie further described the situation that we have with us, Mr. Brian Fritzinger, who is the Cloquet City Manager. I should say the beleaguered Cloquet City Manager, who can answer questions about this specific situation.
Madam Chair, before Senator Laurie speaks, I am, Representative Hilty's right, I'm very familiar with the Cloquet situation because every time I go to or from the Capitol, I drive through Cloquet like one whole lot of other Minnesotans do. And you've never stopped at Gordy's Hi-Hat for a burger and some onion rings. You'll want to try that on here on one of your next trips north, but pretty, almost like a landmark stop, a little bit like Hinckley, that little restaurant is. But the interesting thing about Cloquet is they're one of those communities that we hear about when we talk about overburden, where they have an incredible amount of traffic volume goes through their city, and people stop, and they have a very large paper mill in the middle of their town, and people from the whole surrounding community come in. They have all the wood coming in. I mean, there's some pretty very, very heavy industry in that town that adds a lot of burden to the local property taxpayers. That, as a matter of fact, I think when we talked about potential revisions to the local government aid formula, we talked about the idea of job overburden in communities, is maybe that should be one of the criteria that puts a lot of stress on a community's infrastructure. And I think there's some merit to that discussion. So I just want everybody to understand that Cloquet is one of those cities that has just a lot of overburden. Senator Laurie?
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. Yeah, and Cloquet really is a regional center for our entire region, The projects that they're talking about are of regional significance. They've been carefully crafted for that. There was one they threw in there that I believe was taken out before it hit the books here. But it's also, and I think Representative Hilty said it well, and I think Senator Bach also highlighted the regional center aspects. I'll also add and then let City Administrator Brian Fritzinger kind of finish up and describe the projects and whatnot. But Cloquet is also at a significant disadvantage in this region compared to our neighboring cities, in that Proctor, Hermantown, Duluth, and Two Harbors, all in this same region, each of them have been successful coming to the legislature and getting a local option sales tax approved for them to bring back to their voters. And so it really places Cloquet at a significant disadvantage regionally as well. And so we hope that you are able to take a good look and let one through.
City Manager.
Mr. Chairman, members, for the record, again, Brian Fritzinger, City Administrator with Cloquet. Thank you for the opportunity to come again and speak with you and meet with you a little bit about our project. As Representative Hilty has indicated, we have actually been down here since beginning in 2004 was the first year that we approached the legislature with the request for the local option sales tax. So we've been very familiar with spending time here and trying to explain about our community and the projects that we have. Basically, what we're proposing, as we have in the past, is a one-half of 1% sales tax in the community. That tax would raise between $500,000 and $625,000 a year that we would use for a variety of infrastructure and park and recreational type of improvements. As you've heard with the testimony so far, most of the issues that we're faced with, obviously, in terms of what's happening with the economy and the LGA and all the other issues in terms of budgets, is how do we continue to maintain our services, especially in that sense of a regional center. We do, from a recreational standpoint, attract people from all over the area that participate in our athletics, our ice arena facilities, our baseball, softball complexes, and our soccer fields. They come from all over Carleton County and participate in our programs. Yet, you know, there's not that offset in terms of their cost to the city in doing that. Similar issue with our library. Over 40% of the users of our library are non-Cloquet residents. So, again, coming from all over the area in using that service. Our fire ambulance provides service to over 271 square miles of an area. So we serve a broad-based piece with the Cloquet taxpayers picking up that piece. The projects that we have, again, when we've been struggling with the budgetary issues over the last few years. You know, back in 2004 when we first came here, our LGA was about $3.6 million a year. Depending on where things shake out over the next couple days, numbers that we're seeing could be as low as 1.4. You know, so we've lost over $2 million potentially here as part of an operating budget. You know, with not increases in taxes to that level to offset that. So we have been challenged. And one of the areas that has taken the broadest hit in that has been our infrastructure improvements. We've continued to push off capital investment in the community. You know, and that capital investment that we're looking for here is not really unique, fancy, or flashy sorts of projects. You know, we're talking utilities, water, sewer. We're talking about streets. We're talking about trails for our citizens and our, you know, employees of the businesses that work there. So the projects that we have are just those sorts of things that any community in the state would have or want to have and want to maintain for what they're doing. One of the aspects that has not been mentioned yet that also affects us in Cloquet is about one-third of our population resides within the Fond du Lac Indian Reservation. One unique aspect of that, obviously, is that we have, as much as the Fond du Lac has done an excellent job in expanding some of their services for their residents, creating new jobs for their residents and for the area, none of that has a tip-over effect in terms of property taxes back to the city. We receive no cash in lieu from them. We receive no property taxes from the different activities that the investment that they have. So we have a large part of our community that does not pay property tax. And again, with the additional burden here, we struggle with how to provide the services because they're afforded those same services as everybody else. And they're a key part of our community and a key member of what we do. So with that, the sales tax is a method as we continue to see the erosion of the LGA is an option for us. We at this point don't know how else to continue to provide some of the services that we have, because if we don't reinvest in the infrastructure, the basic stuff of what we have to do for our citizens, we're kind of at a loss as to where we go here. So this is very critical to us, and not here only looking for that flash and fance, but basic things that we need to keep our community going.
Mr. Futsinger, thank you. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hilty has been a champion on this. I don't know how many times we've talked about this sales tax.
Marquardt, have we ever put it in the House bill?
I don't. It would have to have been almost the first year, and I don't remember that, because since then we've had the moratorium, and so it wasn't in last year, I don't believe.
We could figure out a way we wouldn't have to talk about it anymore.
I understand that. And, I would, as opening the door, I would be willing to look at these if the cities would come forward with a plan on equalization, because that's always been my main concern. So if we could see a plan where the cities, groups, and so forth are willing to address this equalization issue, which is a really big concern for mine. That's been a huge concern. Because just as you mentioned, the LGA cuts, which I know you've been hit, but, there's another 500 cities in rural Minnesota that have also received those cuts, and many of those don't have the commercial base to raise other revenues. And that's the real big concern I have with all this. But like I said, I'd be willing to look at this if, in fact, I could see a plan of how this equalization was going to occur. Because that's my big concern. Last year when we had the county option sales tax, we had an equalization with the county program 8. Counties were allowed to do a half-cent sales tax. And some counties like Hennepin, who had a strong ability to raise those revenues, lost all of their county program 8. Counties in rural areas that could raise that lost very little county program. There's an equalization when you looked actually at the per capita at the end, it came out pretty equal all around. I can live with that, but I've seen no efforts to do that, and I'm so afraid that these regional and sub-regional centers will have the benefits here and the others will not. So that's the huge. So what I'm saying is I'm open to this if I can see. And I know we've got the LGA study group, but that shouldn't be the job of that. I'm looking for cities to come forward and with some sort of an equalization plan, because I'm worried about the other 500 cities of smaller size that are also losing local government aid. I understand this huge, huge concern to fund these projects in these communities that are vital, and the resources are getting smaller. So, like I said, I'm not just going to say no, but if I could see an equalization plan come forward from the cities, I'd be open to it. One question I have specifically about this, I noticed in the side-by-side that says there, part of the deal would be for a payment of outstanding debt related to the Cloquet Area Recreation Center. Have bonds been issued, and has that project already been started?
Yes, the project's actually constructed. The Cloquet Area Rec Center is a ice arena facility that was built. We currently manage that facility or operate that facility under a lease with our local hockey association. So they're actually burdened with the payment on all of the debt for that, which we continue to see them fall further and further behind, again, as the economy tightens up on everybody's budgets and they see less and less utilization of the facility. We see more and more of that debt service not being accomplished.
Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. As long as we're using this as sort of a discussion point to the broader local option sales tax, I think if we're going to talk about equalization, it's not just about ability to raise money. It's also about the ability, the uses of those monies. And, this is an example of a mix of potential projects that are primarily to benefit the people who live in that community when you're talking about, you know, soccer fields and baseball fields and trails that employees and people who live there would use. And other places we've expected it to be something that would actually have spin-off benefits to the surrounding cities. And I think we need to look at that as well, because I think we've in the past tended to say you had to meet some kind of a threshold of benefiting the customers that were coming in from the surrounding townships and the surrounding smaller cities. And so we're going to have to figure out what the use is, even if we equalize it in terms of a fiscal capacity concept. So I think this is all worthy of further discussion, as well as the proposal that Representative Mark brought forward last year related to the county concept as well.
Representative Markward, you talk about equalization. What I was thinking about was maybe if we authorized a city, let's use Cloquet, or later we've got Ely, if we authorized them to have one, kind of to represent Loeffler's point of the people in neighboring communities that shop in the more of the regional center getting some benefit. Have you thought about maybe instead of an equalization, some kind of a revenue sharing that maybe a regional center that has most of the retail base would have to share some of the revenue collected maybe with the community that's 10 miles away or the surrounding townships? Or if we start moving away from the aid side and shift more of it locally, maybe we could, rather than create a very complicated distribution formula where we share revenue all over the state, we create something that's more of a regional one where a community that's authorized to collect the tax shares it with maybe neighboring communities that are participating in the collection of it. That's not what you were thinking of relative to equalization, I wouldn't think.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, and you know, that would still be a problem in, you know, southern, southwest Minnesota, northwest Minnesota, where you don't really have much for regional centers and you never would really get a base there. But no, I'm looking at the idea that you've got something controlled by the state, you know, through the local government aid program, through other options to raise revenue, but to make sure it's equalized some way so that, again, which is I think is the main focus and goal of LGA, is to make sure that, you know, the same type of law enforcement is going to cost roughly the same no matter where you live in the state. So that's, and I'm just really worried, especially as these other communities are losing big chunks of their revenues. And some of them, you know, don't have folks coming into their city buying and keeping businesses viable as a regional center, which some don't even have those real economic drivers. And so they just, they're already at a disadvantage.
Well, how is that different than what happened under the Minnesota Miracle, where we raised the sales tax by 1% and then created the local government aid fund to distribute some of that back out, isn't it? Is it, you're thinking that same model?
Prohibited local option sales taxes.
And you're talking about, Mr. Chair, that your regional thing you just talked about. But what I'm worried about is as you get into the more sparsely areas of populated areas of Minnesota, you don't even have a kind of a regional base to go out for. There'd still be huge pockets of inequities.
Well, maybe in some of those, maybe you identify a group of counties based on population or something where it's a countywide local option, and then the county distributes it back through some formula.
And in fact, Mr. Chair, you know, last year when we were doing the county option sales tax, we talked about some of those things as we were developing that plan. So, yeah.
Mr. Chair.
Madam Chair.
Well, and I was mentioning before, I mean, that's the problem. I mean, you know, I really encourage folks to read this, you know. It's pretty short and sweet, and those with big property tax bases tend to have big sales tax bases. And you exacerbate the problem, and you have to come up with a new equalization formula where if you just didn't do it, it wouldn't cost so much in equalization. But one way you could do it is sort of a fiscal disparities. We've had members who did that, said, you know, hey, if Rochester gets one, all the contiguous city, you know, towns and small cities get a share. The problem is, if you did that all across the state, as Representative Marquardt was saying, there's chunks of the state that would get nothing. And, you know, they buy toothpaste, too. They might have to drive 60 miles to buy toothpaste, but they're paying it, too. And so, you know, that's one way. Another way is an LGA offset. And, you know, that gets people's ire up real quick. On the other hand, you know, that's supposed to be based on what revenue you have and what your need is, and you're not counting a big piece of revenue. And then even if you could do that, the wealthiest cities don't, of course, receive LGA, so they don't get a penalty. So, and then the other way you could do it is you could just build it into the need-based part of the formula, or the capacity part of the formula of the aids and credits. But to sort of look at these in isolation and not acknowledge that you're actually growing the disparity by approving these, I think Representative Hilty is right. Cloquet's in a spot where, because other people have it who are bigger and wealthier, they're now at a bigger disadvantage. So now they're asking for the same thing. But then there's someone next to them that's worse off. You know, and because we don't have a good statewide policy around this, the Minnesota Miracle, I'm glad you raised it, because it expressly prohibited local option sales taxes once that was part of the deal. We're not going to do that anymore. We're going to equalize, so we're not going to need to do that. And I think Duluth and, I don't know if Minneapolis and St. Paul had them then, but they got the grandfathers. Or I know Duluth did. But, you know, Ms. Dalton could tell you about that, but I, you know, we've had her show us, you know, the original legislation, and until recently, until 5, 6, 7 years ago, the state pretty much said no to everybody. I think there were 6, 7, 8, 9 of them, and all of a sudden, there's like 15 more. And we got to think this through.
Ms. Dalton, what cities are allowed to put their local option sales tax into their general fund?
Duluth.
Mr. Chair, the only one that's allowed to do, well, the only one that's allowed to entirely spend it on essentially general fund purposes would be the city of Duluth.
And the reason for that is?
Because they
legislators?
They were the only ones who had it in the 70s.
Was it because they actually had a local sales tax before the state enacted a sales tax?
Before the Minnesota Miracle.
No, their sales tax was enacted in 1973.
Time of the Minnesota Miracle. I got to keep it.
The city of St. Paul has some discretion on how a portion of their money is used for neighborhood and downtown projects, which is a little, it's kind of halfway between what the Loop has and what everybody else has, which everybody else is pretty much strictly limited to using it for the specified capital projects.
In the downtown taxing district in Minneapolis?
There are some local taxes in the downtown taxing area, but Minneapolis' general sales
convention
tax
center.
Has to be used for the convention center. I think there is some ability for them to use it for some early childhood development, but the city has never used it for that.
Senator Rest.
Well, you know, we, as I recall, in 19... way back, 88, we did have a general proposal to allow local option sales taxes because cities were beginning to feel a crunch like they are now, obviously, and Governor Burbidge tabled it. So we've tried that before, and then we went back to one at a time.
Well, Mr. Chair, that's what my amendment that I have is does, and I got it from Representative Dorman. That's who did it. He offered it, except he left the metro out, but this would be statewide, and he basically recognized what Representative Hilty said, which is it feels pretty political. You can't go home and explain why does this place have it, not this place, and why do they have it for this and not this, and it just seemed like a crapshoot down here. And I think we all foster that opinion of us by approving these. And so that's the amendment I have would be, hey, if we're going to keep undercutting ourselves in the aids and credits and making the price tag for equalization more expensive by approving these, we should instead just say, let's move to these 40 states that don't equalize, and let's have a free-for-all. Let's be the Wild West. Anyone who wants a local option sales tax can have one, but we're going to start taking it off the equalization, because we are not managing taxpayers' money well by doing both of these. And I think the data is clear on that. Ms. Dalton wrote this memo, I don't know, in response to who in 2007, and it's all still true. I really encourage people to think about this. I've said before, if we had a local option sales tax in my city, we could probably not have a property tax. You know, the arguments for them, they all fit in my city. We have more traffic. We have 494 and 35W and Highway 77 and 169. They're all going right through my district. We have more people working every day in one building in my city, one building, than live in my city. That's just one building. We're a huge job center.
Building's that?
Mall of America. About 109 people are in there on a weekday.
109,000.
And about 86,000 people live in my city. On the weekends, it's much higher. That's one building. We have the biggest hospitality industry in the state, more than Minneapolis and St. Paul combined. People may not recognize that. That's where the airport is. We are the tourism industry for the state. If you add up all the bed and breakfasts and small resorts, we need the sales tax, I guess, because we have a lot of overburden. This is what we're really doing here. I mean, people just really need to think this through.
I'm sure. I think one of the differences is you also have a lot of tax capacity in a lot of these. In a lot of these rural communities, there's just not a lot of taxable property, or what's there is very low value. And so they have the same kind of tax rates as other communities, but it just doesn't generate a lot of money because there's just not a lot of capacity.
Well, that's true, but that same argument comparing Bloomington to Cloquet, you can compare Cloquet to somebody else who's got even less. That's the problem. And these LGA and CPA formulas are designed to recognize that, and that's what we should be funding. We should not be doing these local option sales tax, but, how do we say it's okay then for some and not everybody?
But, Madam Chair, the reason we have so many cities here is we're not funding those equalization formulas.
I know that. But when we can get where we can fund it again, we're making it more, we're raising the price tag by approving these.
I bet if we could restore local government aid to where it was in 2003, these cities would probably be willing to go home and probably wouldn't be advocating for their provisions. If I was going to make a guess, Mr. Footsinger, if we could put you back at your 2003 local government aid number, would you be willing to pull your provision out of the bill?
Mr. Chair, I might, and I might actually do a cartwheel on the way out the door.
I think that's what's driving it, Madam Chair, the fact that the state is not the kind of partner with our local governments that we in previous times have been. And there's just a lot of frustration at the local level that they have limited options when we cost shift onto them. And, there is a point where you jeopardize members in your community, you jeopardize your business community by extraordinarily high local tax rates. So I understand the frustration. I think we all do.
It's not the city's fault. We know that. We don't need to make it worse.
Anything else for Mr. Footsinger or Senator Laurie or Representative Hilty? What do you think? Should we hold on this one, or?
I think we should hear them all.
We hear them all first?
Think through a strategy.
If we do them, we can do them as a package.
That's right.
Maybe there'll be a little something in the package everybody could like.
If we have passed my amendment, they'll all get one.
Mr. Chair, if I could say before we leave, none of us likes the situation that we're in here. And I think we'd all agree that this is not the best option. But if we consider what the future holds for us, if we're listening to the state demographer, or for that matter, if you want to listen to me, or Representative Lencheski, the prospects for restoring any kind of adequate level of local government aid are not all that great. And I think that what we have really here is a decision to make about whether we're going to do anything at all or nothing. So I hope you would decide to do something.
I think, Representative Hilty, you make a very good point, because I was just kind of looking at the numbers last night as I was talking to the finance chairs, and the tax committee, by the time this session's over, when we ratify the governor's unallotments, which I expect we're going to do, and the additional $105 million we cut earlier this year in aids and credits, the tax committee has going to reduce its portion of the state budget by about 13%. 13%. Now, and unfortunately, that's shifting on to other people. And up there on the spending committees, oh, my gosh, if they have to cut 1% somehow, they wonder how they're going to manage it. You know, I mean, but it's because this committee has the opportunity to shift onto our local governments that somehow all the spending committees think, well, the tax committee can make cuts, because they, you know, cities will be okay because they'll just raise their levies. And it's so somewhere in the pecking order of priority around here. I mean, I'm not sure when the public's going to get it. I mean, I was looking at tomorrow is property tax day, right? And if we're on TV, I'll say it to the public. In 2002, when the governor was elected, we collected $4.02 billion a year in property taxes, plus the state general tax, but I won't call it back because that goes to the state's general fund. $4.02 billion we collected in 2002 in property taxes. In 2009, most recent numbers, $6.98 billion in property taxes. That is a $3 billion increase. $3 billion. Now, it's not $3 billion cumulatively. It's $3 billion next year. It's $3 billion the year after. It's $3 billion ongoing of new property taxes over the last that have been assessed over the last since 2002. You know? So, I mean, I've told some people, let's just dismiss the myth. The public knows it. You know, the public knows taxes are going up. You know, it's just that it's happening on property. $3 billion a year of new property taxes. That is not, you know, even in this room, that's real money. And much of it's because we put no money into schools, so we force schools to go out and pass voter-approved levies. And much of it's because we reduced aid to cities and counties and told them, you know, go fend for yourselves. Figure out how you provide police and fire in your community. You're on your own. And I'm about done. And I don't know if I'll be reelected at all this year, considering some of the proposals that I've floated. But if I am, and I'm fortunate enough to be elected to be the tax chair of the Senate next year, I'm all done cutting aid to cities and counties and just letting property taxes run out of control. They're absolutely running out of control. Why Minnesotans are putting up with it, I don't know. I don't know. But I know the impetus for the Minnesota Miracle was a property tax rally at the Armory here in St. Paul. That's how it started. It wasn't an education proposal. It was a property tax rebellion. And it started here in St. Paul. And I don't understand why the next one hasn't been born yet, but it would seem to me people ought to start getting very, very alarmed. It's bad for those, especially bad for young families that are trying to buy that first home, and it's an impediment to home ownership, and it's certainly a big impediment for seniors to be able to stay in their home once they retire. It's creating a huge problem for families that have a little cabin somewhere that's been in the family maybe for a generation or two, and their land values are going way up, and consequently their property taxes are going up, and there's a question whether you can keep the family cabin or not. Certainly a big impediment for economic development. And this is a big contributing factor, the fact that the spending committees keep telling the tax committee, well, you guys make the cut down there in room 15. Because taxpayers, it's kind of masks it. Okay, when we make a cut, people don't see it. Because it's not a cut in a program people can see. It happens at the, and then we blame the local officials.
Right.
You know, they're out of control. They can't control their spending, and the state is not a very good partner with them. And so I'm going to push very hard next year, if I'm still here and it's still in this room at this time of the year, that we quit shifting the burden onto property taxpayers. Because that's why these cities are here, because I think they've kind of reached the limit on what their citizens are willing to tolerate in the form of property taxes. And there are essential services that need to happen in communities. Now, I've told some of my county commissioners when we've talked about this, maybe next time it snows a foot, you just shouldn't plow the road. And say, you know, we can't afford to plow the road more than twice a week. But I'm a little surprised that there hasn't been more pushback on the part of the public on the property tax issue. And I think there'll probably be some pushback at the polls on it, but I'm waiting for the rebellion. I hope I get invited to speak when it happens someday. Senator Laurie, Representative Hilty, anything further? Thanks for coming down. Mr. Futsinger, thank you.
Thank you.
We'll do our best.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, members.
Thank you.
Marshall. Who's here from the city of Marshall?
They don't plow on the weekends in Clearwater County anymore.
Not on the weekends.
It snows on the weekend here. Not a lot.
It seemed to me that, where was it, Minneapolis? They didn't plow at all this winter? Which city was it where they banned parking on one side of the street? They just kind of quit plowing, I think. I mean, I thought St. Paul quit that years ago, actually. Been my experience. They just put enough salt on so it can all melt, it seems like.
Oh, I was special.
Paul, how's that, Paul? They do, don't they?
We plow sidewalks.
Bloomington plows sidewalks.
For residents.
For residents.
Little machines, yep. Right down the sidewalks.
Jeez.
We pay property taxes.
We don't have sidewalks.
Big ones for lots of stuff.
Markport doesn't even have sidewalks.
Well, to
he'd like a local sales tax so we can get some sidewalks.
If you pass my amendment, we won't pay any property taxes in Bloomington.
Let's say, who represents Marshall in the House? In the Senate, it's Senator Fredericks.
Marty Seifert.
Senator Seifert. Senator Seifert. Representative Seifert.
Representative Seifert.
Last 2 years. I'm just thinking.
Just walked by with his kids. I saw him go by with his kids, so I don't know if someone can hunt him down. But
I remember when we heard the Marshall project in the Senate Tax Committee, it seemed like it was a pretty exciting project. It is in the starts on the bottom of page 26. And then carries on to page 27. And I see the House has something also. Representative Conan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just so you know, I carried the bill for Marshall. So. It's a good regional project, and its district is right next to mine. And
it's not in here. On the House side. Oh, we took out the local option. That's right.
So We both have some language. The Senate has a local option and food and beverage and lodging. And the House has just lodging and food and beverage. Is that?
Yes.
Let's kind of hear a little bit more about the project. For Representative Erdahl's not on the Tax Committee, so he probably didn't have an opportunity to hear about this project in the Tax Committee in the House. So please identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Ben Martig. I'm the city administrator for Marshall.
Yeah.
And can you spell your last name for us?
M as in Mary, A-R-T-I-G, Martig.
Martig, okay. Thank you. Thanks for coming down, and thanks for your patience.
Thank you. And that leads in well into my thoughts here is equalization tax policy is a tough one. I don't think by Sunday night you're probably going to solve that issue. Please, I would urge you to look at these projects individually. Don't lose an opportunity for some good projects to go forward where you're looking at bigger picture long-term tax policy. Local option sales taxes have been around for a long time that we've been talking about. I think if you look back, a lot of them are based on regional projects of significance, not covering those traditional projects that cities do on a day-to-day basis, which are funded through property taxes and local government aid primarily. And our projects fall into that category. And I appreciate the opportunity to be able to talk tonight about these projects that are supported in the region. I'm here from Marshall, but I can tell you there are members on our boards and our business people from the surrounding communities that benefit from these projects, will benefit from these projects, and they serve on our boards. They've been involved. They've given feedback. We've received letters of support for these as well. And I think that demonstrates our involving them and in discussing those issues, even though ultimately it happens to fall within the city of Marshall, and our residents will be the ones voting on this issue if you would support us to bring that forward to consider that. As you talked about, we are currently in both the House and the Senate bills. Really, we need to have the Senate language for these projects to be moving forward. We have 1.5% lodging, food and beverage on both sides, and that's covering some of the operating costs that we have on these. And then the general sales and use tax of 0.5% would be covering the capital construction of those projects. And that's the language that we really need to move forward. And I grew up in a small town in greater Minnesota, and I worked as a city administrator in that same town later in life, and we were certainly dominated by a larger regional center of Mankato, and they had a local option sales tax and funded some projects there. And I don't believe in the theory that it's always about winners and losers there, and I can say it from that perspective that I come from. I mean, certainly there are trade-offs of being a regional center. You have to provide extra services to people, but you benefit from as well. And I think the same can be said for some of those communities that surround it out in greater Minnesota as well. Sometimes your costs can be less to live in those communities where you don't have to provide those services and to move in. So, again, I think that's a little bit of a discussion where it gets a little more gray as you get into really digging into these issues. And I'm now working for a community that is a regional center, a significant one in southwest Minnesota. And we don't have sometimes the facilities to be able to drive down the road conveniently to another city that might have something that we want to partake in, whether that's a sporting activity or whether that's the theater or whether it's sending our police officers to a training center where you have to drive 3 hours that it took me to get here today. Those are real costs that we have, and those are services that I think greater Minnesotans deserve as well as those people living in the metropolitan area. And if you talk to those people who lived in the communities around us, they realize they'll never be able to support those types of services, but they're sure glad that we're there to provide those for them. And they're willing, they come and they shop there. And I think when you look at a tax policy standpoint, we cover a 40-mile range roughly of a trade area for spending of consumers and drawing in people for our retail. Those people use our services. Certainly these projects, in particular one of them that's more of an economic development project, will generate more retail opportunities that they'll benefit from, and they'll be able to come to our event center and take part of that. And I think it's only fair that they help pay for some of those amenities well. And let me now move into a little bit and talk about the project specifically. I kind of break it out into two. One's really a regional public safety training center project. We received $1 million in state bonding this session. It's sitting on the table for us. Without this authorization, that project will sit there and wait till the next session. These projects will not move forward using local government aid or property taxes to fund them. This is the tax funding solution that we have to invest in this in our community. It's specifically related to, we get fire departments from around the region and police departments that come in and do training at our center. We're one of two in the state of Minnesota, a Tier 2 training center. Really, it could be a state entity running this operation. It just so happens the city is the owner of this facility. Minnesota West Community Technical College does the customized training at the center. They're based there. They rent from the city at a very favorable rate to try and encourage those opportunities to be there. They do things like burns that are getting more and more difficult for fire departments to do. But our project specifically is getting into a driving track to provide public safety training. I think there's only three in the state of Minnesota. They're backlogged. We have to drive. I think St. Cloud is the closest for our region that they'd probably have to go to that. And again, they have to wait several months out that it's booked. We know the private sector will utilize it. We've got a lot of deaths out in greater Minnesota of students driving, and that will certainly benefit the track there. Our police departments are training in pursuit training in parking lots where their maximum speed's 40 miles per hour, or on airports where they really should be used for aviation purposes. So certainly from a public safety standpoint, that's the one project we have. The other one is an amateur sports center project. It's all about economic development. Yes, it's about recreation and all of that, but we're part of the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission. They've supported our project. They understand economic development related to amateur sports in Minnesota, and particularly Marshall's strategic location as being close to South Dakota and Iowa. We have the opportunity to bring spending into the state of Minnesota that's not just distributing money from one community to the next. We're drawing in real new spending from outside of the state. Brookings, Watertown, and Sioux Falls are finding ways to get projects like this done. And we think they want to come here to play hockey in the state of Minnesota and to also be able to partake maybe in other events. And they don't have to pay any taxes on clothing if they come here and shop either. So that's a little added benefit that we can get to bring them over here.
They should come in the next year. Stock up.
These are truly regional projects. I know the community believes in that. I'm their representative here today. The sales tax, again, as I talked about, is important to this project. Our local economy is showing some good signs. Menards is building a 160,000 square foot building. They just started a couple of weeks ago. There's a convention center, privately owned, privately it will be financed for the construction near this area, that if we go forward, it'd be a convention center and hotel project. We know retailers are excited about this project. And in this kind of an economy, I think that's pretty exciting, particularly to a community like Marshall and in the southwest part of the state. I don't think Representative Coonan would be carrying this bill, as he doesn't directly serve our district. If this was truly a local project, I don't think he'd be carrying it, and he is. He understands that these are regional projects and has supported us, and we greatly appreciate him and his support, as well as Senator Frederickson, who on the Senate side has carried that. We have a general election coming up this November. I think there's going to be a pretty good voter turnout for that election, and those voters will decide whether or not this really rings true and whether it really will bring jobs, because I know people aren't real excited about taxes in this day and age, but if you got a good project, I think people are willing to step up and invest in those projects. So again, as I talked about, I understand this is a complicated issue when you talk about equalization, but please don't lose an opportunity to get some good projects through if they really hold their own weight. And I'm here to talk about our project only and not necessarily about all the other ones, but again, I appreciate your time, and I can talk specifically about any of the details of my project tonight.
Yep. Mr. Martig, the bonds you need to sell $17.29 million?
The total project cost, I believe, is about $15 million total between both of the projects, and yes, we would be financing that with bonds to be repaid back through the general sales and use tax.
Well, Madam Chair, I'm just wondering, it looks like we both authorized the same amount of bonds to be issued, but it doesn't seem like the House brought enough revenue to satisfy the bonds, or is it just that the Senate's paying them off earlier?
Mr. Chairman, when we brought it to the House Tax Committee, there was clearly opposition on the general sales and use tax.
30 years.
So we agreed to move forward with the 1.5 on the remaining part of that. I think they extended the length of that term out, but we never really had a great chance to determine where that shook out. So we're happy to be here today, but we're really focused on the Senate version. For these to go forward, that was originally where we spent our time and effort in coming up with a financing plan, and that's the way that we could finance it. Without that, we'd be tabling it to the future. The Senate bill just won't work for us, the House bill just won't work for us.
Mr. Chair, we went 30 years in ours.
Do we know if the menu of taxes the House has provides enough revenue annually to satisfy the debt service?
I don't know that we care. It's not our job to find out.
Do we know? Ms. Dalton,
they can raise property taxes.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we don't have information on how much would be raised by either of these taxes from the city.
Okay, thank you.
I think I won't be able to give a direct answer to the annual repayment on the $15 to $17 million bond issue, but I think the 1.5% on the lodging, food, and beverage would generate about $450,000 per year and the half general sales and use tax would generate about $1.2 million per year. But again, we were looking, when we went in originally with the House bill with the full proposal similar to the Senate. That was the compromise the committee was willing to do to move it forward. And again, we're focused on the Senate bill.
But Mr. Martin, you don't think the House language will work? Is that what you're saying?
That's correct.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Chesky.
To the testifier, are you levying up to the max of levy limits on your property tax?
No.
There you go.
But again, Mr. Chairman, these projects we wouldn't finance through property taxes. We look at them as regionally beneficial, and that those people benefiting shall pay for it, not just the residents of Marshall.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Chesky.
You know, we have some of these things in my community, like facility training centers, and they're paid 100% on the property tax with no state bonding.
Is the city owner?
Yep. Something to think about.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to comment that as a member of the Capital Investment Committee, I am aware of the Marshall Project. We've had a presentation given to us, so I do appreciate the information again.
Representative Erdahl, is it a good project?
Of course.
You've been there.
Sure
look,
is.
And,
yes.
Right, correct?
Yes. I think particularly the sports center portion of it, I think, is would be a draw for that area.
Mr. Chairman, good project?
Yes, I think they are, and that's why I carried the bill, and they are regional. I've got good support from District 20B also on this one. And, you know, we could say, well, the 20B people don't live in Marshall, but there's a lot of them that drive to Marshall every day. So.
Representative Markhorn.
Question for the testifier. Would you be able to finance the emergency training center with the lodging, food, and beverage tax if we just took that project?
Yes, we would be able to finance the emergency center only with that funding. I think where the challenge will be is politically this ultimately has to go to a vote as well, and whether or not we could sell that to the community. The community really kind of rallied together on these two projects and sold them as a package and felt that was the way to bring it forward, that it had to be more than just one project or the other standing alone.
Mr. Chair, if I'm looking at these, the emergency training center is, to me, the truly regional one. The other one gets a little. So, I mean, if we were to pick projects here, that would be the one I would put first. And so, okay, so that would fund that. Thank you.
So, Marty, how do the two projects break out kind of in cost?
I can, this sheet will, if you want to pass those around a little bit, the Amateur Sports Center is the larger cost project. That's about $12.9 million. And then the Merritt Public Safety Training Center is about $4.2 million.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Chesky.
You know, I know I'm obstinate, but I do want to, for the record here, we did hear this, and we thought it was a good project, too. And we didn't say no. The House position is we're going to let them have a lodging tax, an alcohol tax, and a food tax. And they've received state bonding. So, I mean, I just want to be clear on the record that, you know, the House didn't say no.
No, Madam Chair, I see that. I see that. I was just curious as to why we both bonded the same amount.
We have 30 years. If you look on page 27 of the side-by-side subdivision 7, under the House Article 5, you can see we structured it differently than the Senate. You know, where 30 years after the tax or whenever revenues are sufficient to meet the capital operating and administrative costs, whichever happens first.
Commissioner, is it possible to find out what the food and beverage and the lodging tax would raise annually for Marshall? Just so we'd know, kind of, do the numbers work on a 30-year bond with those two revenue streams, I guess is what I'm interested in.
Chairman, we can certainly check on that and see. So the food and beverage and the lodging combined, what would that would generate on an annual basis?
Right.
How much it would...
Mr. Martek, do we know that, or...?
Our estimations, I believe it was the 2007 numbers that we used, that Department of Revenue had. I thought we calculated it was about $450,000 per year.
The two together?
The food, beverage, yep, and lodging.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Lentreski.
I also want to note, you know, the commissioner has said that the governor requires a referendum on food and beverage taxes. And you don't have that in your bill. We don't have that in our bill, and I disagree with that. I really think... those should not be referendum approved. They never have been. They exist for these kinds of purposes. That's exactly what they're designed for. And all kinds of people already have them. I don't know that the legislature's ever turned one down. And I think if we're going to do these, we should not change course here. I'd love to know what the Senate thinks. I mean, it potentially draws a veto of the whole bill. But, I mean, that's another concern. I mean... you know, of course, it's an election, which I'm all for those, you know, but it's really who's going to vote against that? You know, so you're just spending the imagine it through, like, okay, we as voters could vote to tax other people who don't live here instead of us. I mean, everyone's going to vote for that. And you just, Twin Stadium, exactly. You know, I mean, who would turn that down, right? So you're just forcing an election on exporting a tax. I don't know. I mean, I guess I'm not understanding the logic there, really, honestly. And maybe there are fully contained areas where it's just exactly the same residents. I just like to know what the senators think about that if we're going to, you know, decide we can't put these food and beverage taxes in without referendums.
Madam Chair, if the Senate Tax Committee thought it should have a referendum, it would be in the bill.
Well,
and
this
it's not.
Is new. But this and is new not. Information since you did your bill and we did our bill. I had never heard this before. Commissioner told both of us this after the bills were closed. So I just wonder what anyone else thinks about these. Doesn't Rochester have one or wants one? Or, you know, do you want to hold a referendum on? I mean, I think they're kind of silly.
It was authorized last year, food and beverage.
Right, and yeah. No one, I don't know. I just.
And there was not a referendum.
I'm all for the referendums. I think, you know, I voted against the K-12 provision that allowed the levies to be renewed without a vote. I think there should have been a vote. But, you know, this is just, I don't know.
Senator Frederickson, welcome to the Tax Conference Committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
This may be your last opportunity to testify in a conference committee.
Mr. Chairman, I believe you're right. The last conference committee I was on finished like a day ago, so, and I haven't been assigned to any since then. So.
Senator Frederickson, let me just say thank you for all your service to your district and to the state of Minnesota over how many years?
30 years, Mr. Chairman.
30 years.
It's been a very rewarding and worthwhile 30 years. I've enjoyed it, even some of the very late night financed bills, conference committees that I've been on. And I know the tax committee has worked very hard. Some years, I suspect, through the night.
Well, Senator Frederickson, the House does have provisions that I think we both bodies want to do the project. I think we think it's a good project. I think the question kind of is, the House is proposing food and beverage and lodging, a longer term for the bonds, 30 years rather than the Senate's 15. I think what we have to figure out is, we both want to do the project, just whatever we pass, that it actually works. There's a pretty substantial difference in the term of the bonds. So, Senator Frederickson, would you like to talk about the project at all?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would just like to say, you know, the details of the project. These projects are very important for Southwest Minnesota. You know, Marshall is very much the regional center for Southwest Minnesota. This is for the entire region of Southwest Minnesota, and I would hope you can find a way to keep them in the bill.
They're in on both sides.
Well, Senator Frederickson, we're gonna try to run some numbers and see if the lodging and food and beverage actually generate enough money to pay the bonds, I think. Because what I don't want to do is put something in the bill and just mislead people that somehow the project's going to work when financially it actually won't. So I think, but it's in both sides, so hopefully we can figure out how to make it work. So, Senator Ferguson, thank you.
Okay.
And Mr. Martig, thank you for coming down.
Members, thank you.
Senator Murphy here.
There he is. Still.
This may be Senator Murphy's last conference. Quinn, do you have anything else going on, Senator Murphy? Or is this it?
The House will be getting the message later on this evening. That's what we just got done doing on the Senate floor. That was my last piece of business. So anybody that wants to spend $100 million, you can vote for that bill.
$100 million?
$100 million. In transportation, we know how to spend money, and we're pretty good at it. So we're giving another authorization for another $100 million. They're doing a great job buying stuff dirt cheap. Might as well build your way into success.
Are we bonding?
That's why we're here with the City of St. Charles.
Are we bonding, Senator Murphy, for it, or are we using cash?
For the $100 million? Oh, it's bonds.
$100,000.
But, you know,
we see,
it's like Yogi Berra said,
like we're,
you know,
kind of chumpers down here. $100 million?
$100 million?
$100 million. You know, of all that stimulus money that got splashed around, 6% of it got spent on transportation, created 50% of all the new jobs. 6%, 50% of all the new jobs. So just remember that next year when you all go to spend money like drunk sailors, because I know how to do it. I just spent $100 million.
But an awful lot of it went to help balance state budgets all across the state.
That's true.
That wasn't, I think it might have been a little bit of a stretch to call it a jobs bill, except in the transportation area.
That's where the hay was made. Mr. Chairman, we're here today, Representative Druskowski, myself, and the mayor from St. Charles. I think everybody in Minnesota knows the plight that the City of St. Charles has been through in the past couple of years. I mean, we had the flood of several fires, lost our largest employer. The mayor and Representative Druskowski are here to help foster a program through to get the city get the city back up and running. Well, it's not like the city quit running, but I mean,
maintained.
But this is going to give them a leg up going into the future. And as anybody knows, St. Charles is kind of uniquely placed in southeastern Minnesota and has great access to some of our transportation services. And they want to be able to utilize those to bring some more business and jobs back in to replace what has been lost. It's
Mr. Chair,
welcome to the Tax Conference Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee, and thanks for, I'd like to first of all thanks to Chair Marquardt and Chair Lancheski for including this item on the House side. We originally came with a bill that would have converted some declining pupil aid that was in last year's bonding bill, actually, that was not widely used or actually fortunately necessary for the school district, and the bill was a little bit, actually maybe Representative Marquardt, a lot awkward as we looked at kind of some of the precedent and how that did or maybe actually didn't fit, and some wise counsel from House fiscal staff and some of the more veterans here in the legislature on the House side suggested that maybe the right way to do this actually would be an LGA carve-out. And so that's what ended up being included in the bill on the House side. And we would encourage the committee to consider including it in the final product.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Marquardt.
Yeah, and we did talk about this last night when you and Chair Lancheski were on your call with the governor, but the situation is that last year, as Representative Druskowski mentioned, there was $242,000 set aside in the bonding bill for a potential loss of student aid or student enrollment. And actually, that didn't really materialize. Fortunately, students stayed in the school for the most part. So really no dollars came through that route. And then in the tax bill last year, we allowed for a sales tax exemption for the company to build a new building. Well, they decided not to do that, so that money also was not expended. So My understanding now is they'd like to use these dollars for a business park here, which I think we see here. So the dollars that they had last year in their bills never came to fruition in any regard. So that's why we made a carve out of the LGA.
So, Mark, we're at the 2 years?
$50,000 for each of the next 2 years.
Is there any way you could pay that?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Drzewski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as Representative Marquardt pointed out, there was a sales tax exemption in last year's bill, and it didn't come to fruition as North Star Foods, as we know, was completely burned to the ground, and 250 employees, or the employees weren't lost, but the jobs were lost. And so that did go to the bottom line in the February forecast.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, Bill Spitzer, the Mayor of St. Charles, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate all that. I know that's been a busy day. And I just wanted to testify in front of the committee here just to talk a little bit about our project. I understand you were talking a little bit about it last night. And hopefully if you have some questions, we can answer those questions for you. One of the things that Representative Drzewski pointed out is we did lose 250 jobs. When North Star Foods burnt down a year ago, it took away 250 jobs for our community. Now, those 250 jobs, all those employees had 250 paychecks, obviously, that came down and spent their money in not only St. Charles, but also in neighboring Rochester. We had some of these places where they're spending the money. And one of the things that we want to restore is we don't want to create jobs. We want to recreate the jobs. We want to get these jobs back. We want those 250 jobs back for our community, because what we've seen is we've seen some things happen. And I was in my spare time when I was waiting to testify here, I was talking to some of your staff members, and this young lady back here used to come back down to the pizza place in St. Charles. She loved the pizza place in St. Charles. And unfortunately, the pizza place in St. Charles closed down. Now, is it directly a result of North Star Foods? Who knows? But it did close in the last 3 months. So these things are going to start happening. These jobs that were very valuable to the city of St. Charles, we want to try to recreate that. And we want to try to recreate that by constructing a $2 million facility right by Interstate 90. Now, the state demographer has told us that, you know, the only places that are probably going to grow in Minnesota are the places near freeways and lakes. Now, I don't know if he's correct or not, but we have the freeway, so let's take this opportunity. And I guess one of the things that I always look at is, yeah, we've had a flood. We lost some property. Yeah, we lost North Star Foods. We lost a church in the same year. But you know what? With every disaster is opportunities. And I think there's a great opportunity here, but we need to partner, and we need to partner with the state of Minnesota. One of the things that we've done is we've done it through some TIF extra finances. That's part of the equation. Some deed dollars, we're looking at that. And we're also looking at some of these dollars that we're talking about today. We're talking about some of the dollars that we're requesting, the $50,000 that the House has in their legislative proposal. And I guess, we asked for originally $300,000, and we need that partner. The citizens of St. Charles are behind this. The local businesses are behind this. They want to create these jobs. We want these jobs. We need these jobs. I think it's all about creating jobs, or, as I said before, recreating the 250 jobs. It's all about jobs. It's all about retaining families. It's all about stronger education. Thank you for your time.
Mr. Mayor, how many lots are going to be in the new industrial park?
We have about 37 acres that we have that we're going to put in the proposal. We don't. That's one of the things that we're shying away from. We don't want to actually pie it out, because there might be some people that want a 5-acre spot. There might be some people that might want a 10-acre spot. We're not going to limit it by setting out the pie shape. We want to make sure that any opportunities that we can, you know, come up with, we don't leave, or we leave all the doors open, is what I want to say.
Did North Star Foods build somewhere or expand somewhere else?
They elected to sell their business to Quantum Foods in Chicago. So the jobs that we had in Minnesota, we lost out to Illinois, which is unfortunate. And of the jobs, the 250 jobs, 100 of those employees moved to other states, Iowa, Nebraska. Nebraska. You know, so those are jobs that are in Minnesota. And by the way, when I said that they paid or got those paychecks on Friday like today, that means that the income tax isn't being paid to the state of Minnesota. So we're all kind of losing on this battle.
Mr. Mayor, how many people live in St. Charles? I know I've driven through. It's right on 14, right?
Yep, we're about 3,500 people. We have we're right on Highway 14, and I-90 is right on the southern edge of our community.
And North Star Foods must have been your largest employer.
It was the largest private employer. Yep.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and the mayor. Have you noticed on a significant change in your population since the fire?
You know, we've noticed. I don't know if you want to say significant. There has been several families that have moved out of the district. A lot of the families have chosen to stick around because we did just get the notice that North Star Foods was not rebuilding as of January. So a lot of them were hopeful that North Star Foods would rebuild. So fortunate we didn't lose a lot of those families, but like I said, we lost about 100 of those employees that normally did work in St. Charles that did move away.
Senator Sundrum, the project.
Thank you, Senator Mark.
How close does St. Charles come to the area you represent?
Well, 20 miles from Rochester. I'd have to look at the map as far as the line, but you know, we're southeastern Minnesota, and St. Charles, is it the gladiola capital of the world or something like that? But you shouldn't miss gladiola days for sure. but it's one of those communities, and, you know, I don't want to start naming communities, but when you think of St. Charles, when you live down there, you just think of St. Charles as this wonderful community. It's a can-do community. It's the kind of community that's progressive in the sense of getting things done. I mean, it's the streets are clean. The main street is just kind of like you want to live there, and the people are obviously wonderful as well. And they've suffered as we talked about last night two terrible tragedies: the flood, and certainly then the fire to follow. And I would just say, you know, you think about, you know, making an investment to. A decision relative to trying to help a community. I think if we can help them now, they will help themselves tenfold over on into the future. And this will be a good decision for us, and it'll be a good decision for St. Charles. And they are that kind of progressive community that can, if you will, go and grow. And they will, and we just give them a little nudge, and they'll be just fine.
Thank you for those comments.
Capital, Mr. Mayor?
Capital, yeah, gladiola capital of the world. Well, we had to give it up to Michigan now that our the founder had passed away several years ago. But, yeah, we were gladiola capital of the world. Come on down to gladiola days. You'll have plenty of gladiolas, that's for sure.
It's a great parade.
Mayor Spitzer, what time of the year is it? Is it summer festival, fall one?
It's the last hurrah in August, right the weekend before Labor Day. Always, every year. Come on down.
You're in competition with the state fair.
I know, that's one of the bad things, but
Barnesville potato days.
Barnesville potato days, too?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah, they have mashed potato wrestling.
do they have cow pie bingo?
Huge event, and they billiards with potatoes, and they have everything. Everything's potatoes.
Barnesville.
Yes.
Mayor Spitzer, thank you. We'll do our best here as we start to get a package put together. And
appreciate all your time. Appreciate
your patience too, and hanging in there with us.
Hey, anytime.
Thanks for your work for your community.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Senator Murphy, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Rostowski, thank you. Is Senator Perry here? Maybe
I
was hoping he wasn't here. Let's try Watan, and then when we take a break, Madam Chair. Let's go to Watan out of the way, and then we'll take a break. The House was on the floor, so they didn't have an opportunity to.
Oh, and Hutchinson's here.
And Hutchinson too.
We should look to see.
Okay. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Madam Chair. Representative Kath, with my mayor of the city of Owatonna, as well as the city administrator from Owatonna. I'm talking about two elements that are in the Senate file, dealing with local option sales tax extension for two projects within the city of Owatonna. They can go into the explanation of the projects themselves, and we'd just love to have the opportunity to share those with you and the relevance that they will serve for our community.
Senator Bach, Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity. Senator Bach, if I lived in your district, you would have my vote after your comments. Thank you very much for those. Madam Chair, we will have the League of Minnesota Cities and the Coalition take a look at your amendment just to make some recommendations to the cities of Minnesota to see how that would affect them so we can have some comments back for next year on that amendment. Ours is twofold. One is for government buildings, and the other is to expand our trails and our park system. Our government building one is that the city of Owatonna was fortunate enough in the early 70s to buy from the state of Minnesota a state school. State school was built in the 1890s, and you can tell the quality of the building. Right now it houses our city offices, it houses our art center, it houses our historical museum for our state school, and it currently needs to have its roof replaced and its roof damage to it, snow removal, and that type of stuff. If you would restore us back to the 2003 levels of LGA, we wouldn't be here talking to you today. But we have got to the point where we can't find additional money in order to facilitate the needs that are there to re-roof it and stuff like that. If we raised our property taxes, 1% would gain about $90,000, and this project is about $1.4 million. So there's a significant need to be able to fund $1.4 million. The other one is the Chase Lake, and we were fortunate enough to have a citizen donate an area that has got a couple freshwater ponds. It's used heavily for fishing. We would be able to expand that, put some amenities into it, and then that would also be able to connect to a regional trail system. The regional trail system would connect to Northfield in that area, so it is really regional in nature. The other thing about the facility for the state school and stuff, it is regionally used. It has the art center there from the old state school, and there's plenty of weddings that are held there. There's also several district meetings that are held there. Chris?
I'm here to answer questions if you need.
Trying to remember, Madam Chair, do we have an existing sales tax in Owatonna? Is that correct?
That is correct. This is an extension of our existing. There is more work to be done in those projects.
So all we're really doing with this is increasing the amount of bonds you can sell? Is that what we're doing?
We're extending the length of our sales tax.
When does the current one expire?
It's governed based on how much money, you know, as soon as we reach the approved amount, and we're estimating that to be mid-2011.
Madam Chair, the tax extends until the additional $3.5 million worth of bonds are paid off? 3.54. What was the total amount that Owatonna bonded for the projects you currently have?
It was approximately $7.3 million for the original.
Sound like you did.
And how many years did it take to pay that off?
Well, like I said, it was passed in 2006, went to a voter referendum, and we anticipated to be satisfied sometime mid-2011.
So they paid it off right away. Mr. Chair.
Representative Lentreski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This isn't really about Owatonna particularly, except for to say that, you know, we really tried to follow the deal, which was a moratorium, and we weren't going to hear bills on them. And Representative Kath talked to us about it as an extension. And as a result of that conversation, you know, we viewed this as, okay, this is an extension for hearing purposes. But I think in the House bill, we actually, and Ms. Dalton can correct me if I'm wrong, but if it's not in there, we talked about, actually I think it's not in there because it went out with the local moratorium that we were trying to pass. But the concept I think that we need to think about going forward, all of us, is, you know, I would never define extension as once you paid for all the projects you said you were going to, that to come back and add a new some new purposes is an extension. I mean, that should be ended then. So, you know, I think we need to be clear on what an extension is going forward, not as it relates to Owatonna, because other cities are going to say this. And, you know, I don't view that as an extension. I mean, it was set up that you would get the local option sales tax till you raised this amount or paid off the thing, and they did that, so it should have turned off. And maybe the language wasn't clear enough, but going forward, I think we need to be clear.
Senator Rust.
Mr. Chairman, as I recall, there is precedent for it, though. I yeah. believe Mankato had a new project that after the first one was paid for maybe 10 years ago or so, and it was allowed to continue in place to pay for something like some airport property or something. What I recall, maybe that's a vague memory, but I don't think it's letting something continue in place to pay for a new regional deal or something. It is not without precedent.
Well, with another referendum.
This requires a new referendum.
Madam Chair, it does require a referendum.
I know that, but Taskins didn't.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Mark Ward.
Thank you very much, and Representative Kath and I have had several discussions on this local option sales tax, but I want to go back to our earlier discussion on this. I'm going to use Barnesville as an example since we talked about potato days, because they're almost about one-tenth the population of Owatonna. They're about 2,300, and Owatonna is about 25,000. So it's about one-tenth. So I was just quickly using my trusty League of Minnesota Cities book that comes out once a year with the tallies. But when you look at total LGA and revenue and property tax levy, it's fairly close. Barnesville's $1 million. Owatonna's 13.2 million. So if you times that by 10 for Barnesville, pretty close, 10 million to 13.2. So there you got the LGA and things working. When you look at the amount of taxable, it's the total state tax capacity. That's cabin plus CI that gets the state tax. So that's going to kind of give you the CI, because I don't think there's much for seasonal rec in those properties. There, per capita, you've got Owatonna, $272 per capita, and Barnesville, $51. So over 5.5 times kind of the commercial industrial. So everything's kind of equal up until that point. Now, granted, they're in different parts of the state, and they're, but all of a sudden now you add this sales tax that is not equalized, and what is somewhat balanced immediately becomes unbalanced. And, you know, that's again, getting back to this whole concept of local option sales tax. And I think when we had the testimony, there's the project on the trail projects.
Correct.
And those were those turned down in the referendum that was held previously?
The first referendum, the trail project was turned down.
Okay. So, all right. So you'd be coming back asking the voters again on this one.
This is a far different project, if I might answer. We've scaled the Parks and Trails project significantly back.
But what uses? I'm looking. What council doesn't look like the spreadsheet has the right sections in it.
The section numbers on the side by side are inaccurate for Owatonna. It should be
23, 24,
and
25. 23, 24, and 25. So, members, on page 28, the Owatonna sections are 23, 24, and 25, not 22, 23, and 24. So you see the Senate modified the uses. This proposal, when it came to us, was significantly broader. I believe there was some wetland planning in it and 800 megahertz radio project in it. So we really narrowed up the uses significantly. It's not a new tax. It does require an additional referendum. We would really like the House to consider this.
Mr. Chair, I probably shouldn't tell Representative Kath this, but well, first, when did the voters vote on this last?
2006.
2006. I shouldn't tell Representative Kath this, but my mother and father-in-law live in Owatonna. Now I'll let them try to figure out who that is, because I didn't take my husband's last name, so it's not Lincheski. Somebody else.
Seems like Owatonna's making a little headway here.
I actually...
a lot of headway.
I actually go there a lot. I'm in Owatonna a lot. And they have a lot of retail. You know, that's exactly why this works for them. And I think Representative Markford's comments really highlighted the situation. And then it's Owatonna and Medford and Faribault, and then the surrounding after that, kind of, you know, they would come into that center to shop, and then they wouldn't be the recipient of the seats.
Is the Representative Kath, is the Cabela's store in the city limits?
Yes.
Yep. Owatonna is a wonderful city. Really nice. And you know what? They got our, I think they took, I don't know if he's still there, but one of our top cops, I think, is their chief of police now. I don't know if he's still there. If he's
just resigned.
Somewhere else.
He just resigned about 2 weeks ago. He's going in to private practice, so.
Great guy.
He is a great, great, great police chief.
Representative Kath, I know that Senator Perry supports this because we, when he presented the bill, do we know if Senator Day supports this? Senator Day represented Owatonna for a long time.
You know, this proposal came after he decided to become a lucrative lobbyist. So, you know, I cannot tell you where he was at because this proposal wasn't before him.
Okay.
But I think maybe the mayor or the city administrator can look at past practice with some of the other proposals.
Visiting with Senator Day, he has said that if it goes to vote of the people, he supports it. So.
In-laws.
Yeah.
We're learning a lot about each other, aren't we?
Kath?
No, not a cabin. They live there. They moved there.
Oh, no, but you got a cabin up on the lake.
Cabin, yeah. Lake Spirit. Didn't know that. Kept that from you for a long time.
I learned that just recently.
So all those stories about cabin owners, I just listened.
So you are paying property taxes in my district.
Not in your district.
No, Wisconsin.
Well, that's right. It was in Wisconsin.
Wisconsin.
So you're paying really high property
Bayfield
taxes.
County by the Apostle Islands. Little town of Herbster. Beautiful. Right on Lake Superior. Right there.
We're from Ashland.
I drive to Duluth, and from Superior it's about 42 miles as you head to Bayfield County. Madeline Island and the Apostle Islands. National Lakeshore. It's really beautiful up there. Should come and visit me.
How often do you go there?
Not enough, because I'm stuck here.
Be there next week?
Nope.
In-laws live in Owatonna.
I'm going to find out, Mr. Chair, I'm going to find out how they feel about this. They're very good, strong, lifelong Republicans. I'd like to see what they think about raising the sales tax.
Excuse, not raising it, extending it.
Well, I think I just took disrespect.
Madam Chair, it's how you ask the question. If you intend to call them, just make sure you accurately ask the question.
I'll ask them if they'd like it to keep going.
For an additional 3 years, probably.
Right.
I think it raises about 1.1 a year.
Yes.
Rough little over 3 years, we'd be looking at extending it. Does that sound about right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Correct.
Yes.
Madam Chair, maybe maybe we can hold on this and see what your in-laws think.
Okay.
They'd have a better idea of whether it's a good idea than I would. But I think it's a pretty good idea. That's why it's in here. But be interested to know what they think, though.
We do. I'll call.
Okay, good. Okay. We're doing good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Kath, Mr. Mayor, City Manager, thank you.
Yep, thank you.
Down. Hutchinson, Mayor Cook, Senator Dell.
Who's the House member?
Representative Shemansky.
It's in both bills.
Shemansky, Representative Shemansky.
Representative Shemansky is here too. Good.
Hello.
Senator Dill, is this your last conference committee? After how many years here?
Well, I'm not sure I'm done with the Health and Human Services one yet.
Well, are you a member of that conference committee?
Yes.
I think you're done.
Well, you'd know more about that than I would. I've been trying to find out if I'm done or not.
I think your conference committee got vetoed.
Well, it got vetoed, but don't we have to fix it up again?
Not sure it'll be a conference committee next time. Maybe another way to get that done. But I suspect you're still going to be doing some meeting, though.
Mm-hmm.
Representative Dill, or Senator Dill, I'm sorry, how many years have you been here?
This is my 24th.
24. Thank you for all your years of service to the district you represent and to the state. And I was very, very honored to be invited to be at the party last night at the Lexington. And you and Senator Vickman certainly have a lot of friends. It was, for those of you that weren't there, it was standing room only. And it took me about 20 minutes to find a place to park. And those of you who are familiar with the Lexington understand the problem there. Why they don't buy a couple of those houses around there is a mystery to me.
All these people.
Well, thank you, Senator Buck,
Senator
for Dill, coming.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We would like to help you be successful here. So if you would like to give a little brief description or have the mayor.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, if I could make an opening comment, then the mayor and Mr. Shemansky, Representative Shemansky, can make a comment too. The mayor, of course, knows this issue inside and out. But the issue is we want jobs in Hutchinson. And when you have a company that's looking for a place to locate or an inside company that's part of the Hutchinson community wants to expand, they look at different things. And one of the things they look at, depending on the business, is the cost of water and sewer. Now, the problem in Hutchinson is that we had a robust economy and the capacity of the water treatment plant and the sewage treatment plant was inadequate for the community with the amount of business that was there before this recession started, and so the city upgraded and spent a lot of money upgrading both the water treatment plant and the sewage treatment plant, and then with a recession hit, Hutchinson Technology Incorporated laid off over 1,000 people, other businesses quit producing so much, the residential customers quit using as much water as they had been, and what's happened in Hutchinson is they're short of money to service the debt on these two big projects. And so you hate to increase the water and sewage rates anymore because they're among the highest in the area. And the other option is raising property taxes, and that's not a good one either because they're high. And I know the city of Hutchinson has done a wonderful job trying to cut back and become more efficient. They've laid off a lot of people. So what we want to do is get permission to do a half-cent sales tax increase for the community approved by the voters to help service the debt on these two projects. And that would help the city because it's a regional center. There's a lot of people that come in from the surrounding area to do business there. They would be helping pay for it. And that would help keep Hutchinson more competitive in terms of their water and sewage rates and their property tax rates to continue to attract more business.
Say anything? Mr. Chairman, Senator Dill really, recapped the situation. We did this to support our local industries, also the growth of the community in the future, and then also to meet some of the regulatory environmental regulations. And we get hit with this perfect storm of the worst economic situation since the Great Depression. We had some major job losses, as well as movement of production outside of the community. So that isn't going to come back in any time soon. So we still have this debt that has to be paid, and revenues to the plants are down significantly. It's rippling through the community in a lot of different ways. It's not just Hutchinson, it's the entire region. Our unemployment's about 11.7%. Meeker County is over 11%. McLeod County, Wright County, they're like 10.5%. And that's because a lot of people from those areas come to Hutchinson to work in those jobs. About 50% of the employees for our major employers, Hutch Tech and 3M, come from outside of the community. So it's a regional situation and has had a regional impact. And frankly, as Senator Dill said, you know, our rates are already among the highest, and that was part of the project. We are going to raise rates to pay for this. But now, again, because revenues are down so much, we would have to raise rates again just to cash flow. That doesn't address any of the depreciation going forward. And, you know, we've tried to do everything else we could, from restructuring the debt that we already have to cutting operating expenses in the two plants by about $1 million per year. We've laid off people. We tried for some federal appropriations. We're unsuccessful for that. Really right now, just to cash flow again, you know, we're going to have to continually raise rates, which is going to make us less competitive to draw jobs, but we really fear the risk of losing more of the jobs that we already have, and that would be a real disaster, not just for Hutchinson, but, you know, the surrounding region as well. So because of the regional impact of the local jobs, we really feel that a local sales tax is fair and reasonable. We've had the support of our local Chamber of Commerce, as well as our newspaper, came out in favor of letting the people decide on this, because they know either way we have to pay for the debt. And this is seems to be an option that's really worth considering, that people think that the community should have the opportunity to vote on that. So,
Representative Schumanski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I would just like to echo and the rationale and the comments of Mayor Cook and Senator Dill. You know, Hutchinson is an important regional center for our area, and the jobs provided there are essential to keeping our families productive, happy, and healthy. And so I recommend that you consider the request for the local option sales tax for Hutchinson and the residents in the area. Thank you.
Thank you. You know, Madam Chair, you can't help but notice there are some mayors in this state that take the work they do for their cities just, some just make an extraordinary effort. And we had one here earlier, the mayor of Burnsville, and Mayor Cook. I mean, I just want to say on behalf of all cities that are LGA dependent, you have been a remarkable champion for them that hasn't gone unnoticed by people like me. Those of us that sit at this table need people to advocate out in our communities publicly across the state. And you've done a remarkable job of being an advocate for a whole lot of communities that don't know your name and wouldn't know you if you walked in the room. So, and to the citizens of Hutchinson who've been giving you the flexibility to take on those tasks and represent cities who are very LGA dependent, thank you to them also, because the residents of Hutchinson pay a price for that, and a lot of other communities benefit from that. So, and on this provision, you've worked dog hard.
Well, it's because it's important too. Seriously, it's critically important, and that's why. So I hope people understand that.
I mean, the mayor actually came to see me last summer about this, and convinced me that he really had a crisis in his community. And I believe it, and I think, Madam Chair, we need to figure out how they've been put in a very difficult situation through no fault of their own with two major employers that have pulled a big piece of their revenue for their facility out from under them. And Representative Marquardt.
Well, Mr. Chair, I first want to echo your comments on Mayor Cook, because we've talked quite a bit. He has been a champion, not only for Hutchinson, for regional centers and LGA and that around the state. And, you know, one thing we've seen consistently of all the people that have been before us today is they're all regional centers, and they've all lost local government aid, every one of them. And regional centers, they are vital to the survival of rural Minnesota, absolutely. I mean, I wish we could get them those funds. In the LGA formula, though we do recognize that fact, that regional centers are important, they do have an extra burden. You know, we still have all of the grandfather in the LGA, which is only a few percent now, 25 million, all is for regional centers. That's 25 million of the grandfather still is for regional centers. And then at least two provisions in the current LGA formula recognizes the extra burden. The new jobs factor we put in 2008, and then you've got that roads accident factor, which is also to look at that burden. That was one of the reasons that was put in. And you go to the Representative Rukavina flopper, you know, the signs that go up and down so people have more accidents. But then when he found out they had to be over like $1,000 per accident, then he had to remodify that plan.
What is that sign flopper?
It would, in areas where you didn't want people to stop, you know, so they'd have more accidents, the sign would go down as traffic.
He was trying to run up the numbers of accidents to get more aid.
Yeah, and then they wouldn't salt the intersections and stuff like that to try to get up the accident factor and get more LGA.
Right. Trying to have a lot more accidents in his community. Without anyone getting hurt.
The Rukavina LGA increase plan, that's what that was.
You don't know about that? Oh, yeah.
So.
Well, no, we haven't discussed that proposal in the Senate tax.
But, so.
Is that a bill?
No, it wasn't a bill. He just mentions that all the time. But yeah, I know we want to break for supper. But, you know, the point being is, We've got to make sure these regional centers stay strong. And, you know, again, if the city groups and so forth come forward with a proposal on how to kind of equalize that, you know, I'd be willing to look at that. Because even the House, we've supported local option sales taxes last year in our county plan. But it was equalized. And that, I think that's what you're hearing from us. We're not just against those. And believe me, we know the regional centers, how important they are. I mean, this, you know, people go to them for shopping and movies and doctor appointments, and, you know, they're very valuable to the area. But the LGA formula does recognize that already. So how can we deal with the equalization? If we can do that, you know, that's one of the reasons we wanted to put the moratorium on for two more years. I think that would bring folks to the table to say, let's come up with a plan for equalization of some sort.
Representative Marquardt, do you think if somebody had offered that moratorium on the floor of the House, it would have gone on the bill?
No.
I don't think so.
Representative Coonan ranked it for us.
Representative Coonan, tell us about the Hutchinson.
You can't live
too far from there. What is this a good proposal?
He blew up our bill.
Yeah,
he
did. Mr. Chairman, I'll take credit.
We're getting a little crack in the armor now.
Mr. Chairman, Hutchinson is fairly close to the east side of District 20B. I don't know, excuse me, but from the Renville County line to Hutchinson, that's just a matter of miles.
About 40.
Yeah.
4 or 5.
It's close. But anyway, and a lot of people that live in 20B work in Hutchinson, and of course, people from 20B lost jobs, too, when the Hutchinson Tech laid off a bunch of people. So it's important. Those eastern cities like Buffalo Lake and Hector, they know that there's trouble with jobs in Hutchinson. That's pretty clear. As Representative Marquardt was mentioning earlier, that regional centers are important, you know, for shopping, services, and work. There are actually three regional centers that affect 20B, and that, of course, is Wilmer, Hutchinson, and Marshall. They all kind of border around the edges, and so it's very important. in Hutchinson's situation, the city was just doing what cities do, trying to provide services. And then, of course, with what happened in the economy, now they're you know, in a tight spot. And, you know, here, I don't, well, let me stop and start again. In the tax committee and on the floor now, I voted twice this year to cut back LGA, and that's, you know, not a very pleasant thing, but it's the reality of the budget and where we're at now. And so as legislators, we do have some responsibility in what's going on out in the state, of course. And, you know, these local option sales taxes are one way to try and alleviate that. But as Representative Marcourt talks about, there's a lot of cities that will never have these. And so I agree with the statement we need to look at some type of equalization, but I don't have any idea at this point what that is yet. I really wish that cities would have come forward, the League or the Coalition or whoever would have come forward with some ideas. I would love to see what they have in mind from that side. This isn't an easy issue. You know, when you look out into the future and budget forecasts and just the outlook of the economy as we go ahead, there's no way that I can see that LGA, County Aid, and any of those things are going to be restored anytime soon. I mean, I think we're looking at a number of years. And even when that does start coming back, unless there's something I don't see, that is going to be a slow process, too, out into the future. But again, these cities, they got their backs against the wall. I understand the feeling completely. But again, I wish that they would come forward with some ideas on equalization. Thank you.
Representative Erdahl.
Certainly, Mr. Chairman, the cutbacks at Hutch Tech and the employment problems in Hutchinson affect my area too. I represent the neighboring district, the other part of Senator Dill's Senate district, and so you know recognize the importance of doing something for Hutchinson in that regard, because frankly I have a lot of people who work there too. In fact, I'd recommend that the citizens of Litchfield be able to vote to raise Hutchinson's taxes if that would help them out.
You recommend they vote yes?
For Hutchinson's taxes, yes.
Sounds like another stadium.
Can House Research tell me, is the side-by-side on this provision accurate?
It's confusing.
Yes.
What's the status here, Representative Marquardt? Yeah,
Mr. Chair, here's what happened. Taking you back in the
what
history.
Representative Coonan did to us.
Yeah, this is what he blew up.
Yeah, it's his fault.
Yes. How did he wind up on this conference?
I don't know.
At any rate, in the division report and passed, we had a 2-year moratorium on local option sales tax. We extended it 2 further years. And then in the tax committee, Representative Coonan offered an amendment to say that if the 2-year extension continued on the moratorium, which was still in the tax bill at the time, that Hutchinson, the city of Hutchinson, would be exempt from that. So they could come in the next 2 years and apply for a local option sales tax. That went on by a very close voice vote. So at that point, well, there had been an early amendment to take the moratorium off, which had failed. Okay, so then Representative Coonan. So after that point, Representative Broad brought back her motions. He said, okay, if we're going to allow one exemption, we might as well open it up. So we reconsidered the vote on the amendment to keep the moratorium or to take it off. So that passed about 12 to 8 then to take the moratorium off. That was after that man right there blew up the bill.
Blew it up.
And so then it actually made Representative Coonan's amendment a moot point, because now no longer was the 2-year extension. Am I saying this correctly?
I think that's right.
Okay, then the 2-year was... Then, so once that amendment did away with the moratorium, then in fact, he didn't need that amendment anymore. So
wasn't his amendment adopted?
It was,
yes.
But it was just...
Ms. Dalton, tell me what happened.
That's what happened. She wrecked our bill.
Kunin's amendment amended the same section of the law. Okay. So when they went to take out the moratorium, they just voted to take out the entire section, which included his amendment.
You mean it was in the bill?
No. The moratorium was. He wrecked it.
But the moratorium was in, and Hutchinson was in.
No. His plan. They could just come in and be exempt from that law.
Well, what kind of a no wonder it passed. It doesn't do anything. Jeez.
Representative Clunan's done more for the city of Hutchinson than anyone will ever know.
I know it.
Killed the moratorium.
He undermined the chairs that day. In a
matter the chairs, of and I think Representative Loeffler voted no.
In a matter of like 7-8 minutes, the whole works of that thing went in that bill. Just
and yet the House
the
position
right.
is Representative Clunan's position.
He's planning on redistricting.
So the House position is what?
Relative
to the Hutchinson sales tax, what's the House position that they brought to conference?
Nothing.
We're silent now.
Yeah, we're silent.
Before we were like, no way ever, you can't even talk to us about it.
Right,
until
for
you
the next
it.
2 years. But now it's...
But then...
They can talk to you next year.
But he really did the whole, all of these regional centers a huge favor. Because he killed the moratorium in one fell blow.
But the moratorium was never in law.
It's in our bill. We tubed it.
It was the main part of my division report.
Yeah, but that it kind of goes to my point. How would if somebody had made a motion on the floor of the House to take out the moratorium, what would have happened?
Probably would have passed, do you think?
I think so.
I think
so. So instead of being so critical of Representative Opponent, seems like his position would have prevailed on the House floor had you offered it there. But being the team player you are, you decided to offer it in committee. To avoid embarrassing the chairs of the committee you serve on the floor of the House. Seems like you were doing them a favor. They just haven't recognized it yet.
You
know, Mr. Chairman, there's some time management here, too. In the committee, it took 7 or 8 minutes. On the floor, that could have took an hour and a half.
At least.
Good point.
So there were multiple reasons that you helped them out. Seems like they've been a little critical of you. I think they might be kind of looking at this the wrong way. So the House does not have a provision on the Hutchinson sales tax? I was led to believe you did.
It feels like we do.
Feels like you have a position in support of it, then.
Kind of feels that way.
Write that down.
Mr. Chair?
Senator or Mayor Cook.
Just
a
couple
file of next week. I'm wondering why that was a.
Yeah, maybe. a couple points, I guess. You know, as far as the LGA piece, I mean, we've got all those same needs that LGA is intended to address. This is an extraordinary situation above and beyond that we need some help on. And, you know, we've set up our water and sewer funds probably like a lot of cities and regional centers where they're enterprise funds, where the rates pay for everything. And that's what was intended, you know, when we did these expansions, that the rates would pay for the bonds. However, you know, because of the changes in production and usage, that isn't possible anymore, you know, without raising rates even higher. So where I understand, you know, where Representative Marquardt talks about the equalization, you know, there's got to be a avenue or provision for these extraordinary situations like ours, and just like apparently there was in Rochester a few years ago with some sewer expansion there out into the townships, and maybe there's other cities, but... You know, again, we just ask for the opportunity to have the local vote on it. So,
Mr. Mayor, how much with the job losses you've had and the the reduction in water usage and sewage flow, how much revenue a year or a month has the city lost as a result of those, of the jobs, the scaling back of the facilities?
I can't tell you that offhand, unfortunately. I think we would have to raise, if we did it in property taxes or in rates, you know, we'd be looking at about a 25% increase in either one. You know,
so how much money is that at the end of the year?
About $1.3 million is what the sales tax is going to generate. And because we've drawn down reserves, again, we're not putting away any money now to do any depreciation or any infrastructure projects. And so we're just cash flowing operations.
It seems that the city has a problem that really is kind of out of their control. That's why President Cooney's amendment went on your bill. Only to come off by accident because of the way Representative Broad had her amendment crafted.
Yeah.
Or it probably would have been in your bill. Because the vote on taking out the moratorium wasn't a vote on the Coonan provision. He just was kind of a victim of the vote, it seems to me.
I don't think so.
Make him look like the victim.
Yeah, we're the victims.
You make him look like the victim.
He's not the victim.
He seems like the unintended consequence. He's the unintended consequence of the Broad motion. Is that... President Cooney, does it seem like you feel like it?
You know, Mr. Chairman, I don't think that really mattered because my amendment exempted Hutchinson from the moratorium extension. The Broad amendment just got rid of the moratorium extension altogether. Didn't Hutchinson was still in the same position. So.
Representative Coonan sent an invitation to Representative Broad. Motion. Inspire, encourage her to act.
Mr. Chair, I would say I think everybody was kind of surprised how that played out, though. So, you know, if it just had stopped where Representative Coonan's amendment was, then we would have been exempted, just what you're saying. So.
Is this part of the markup of the bill, or did this happen?
Yeah.
It must have been great theater.
Oh, yeah. I should have called for a roll call. Found out who thought it was okay to raise sales taxes all over the state. But I didn't. I think the votes might have been different.
I don't care how often do you have roll calls in the House Tax Committee.
Usually every markup, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
At all. Other times or just?
We don't vote on anything until we mark up. So. You? We lay everything over. Is that what you do?
Sometimes. Sometimes we send things out on their own, like the Haiti provision.
Like Haiti, yeah.
Mr. Mayor, anything further? I need a little help here.
I don't know what else I can do. You know, again, just trying to be here and talking and... really trying to paint the picture, as everybody said before. There's a story, and this is a real story. My wife is working with the census around Hutchinson now, and she comes back and tells me about the job losses that people have had and the foreclosures that are happening now. Our foreclosure rate has been going up still. I mean, we're going to have probably 90 to 100 foreclosures this year. That's up from about 55 last year and under about 45 the year before. So, you know, people's severances from HTI are running out or have run out. And, you know, so that's part of the ripple effect that's happening here. And we can't afford to lose any more jobs. And that's not just Hutchinson. That's the whole region. And this buys us some time, hopefully stabilizes things so that doesn't happen, and also gives us the opportunity to be more competitive, to draw more industries into Hutchinson to provide more regional jobs. So.
Mr. Mayor, how many jobs did HTI reduce?
1,200. They still have 1,200. But and so we don't want to lose those. Yeah. They've got other opportunities. They shifted a lot of their production over to their plant in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Their rates are half of what ours are. And they're looking at the rates. And if we have to keep increasing more, you know, that's going to be a problem. And 3M's got other options as well. So this is a very real problem.
How many people does 3M have in town?
About 1,350.
Mm. What was their previous high?
Around 1,800. Now, that wasn't as part of this economic situation. They actually had an early retirement package, and they backfilled some of those jobs, so they weren't having any layoffs themselves. But, you know, other, again, with the HTI situation, you know, there's ripple effects through other jobs in the community as well.
Representative Marquardt.
Quick question, yeah. Mayor. What percent of your sewer and water revenues are residential and what percent commercial industrial? Have you got that number?
And what it was before, wait, about, well, usage, I guess I don't have it on a revenue basis. I got it on a usage basis, but not a percentage. But before the reductions, the economic residential was about 850 million gallons per year, and industrial is about 550. Residential has gone down to about 770, mm-hmm. and industrial has gone down under 300.
Thank
so
you.
Over almost 45% they've gone down.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Mr. Mayor, thank you. Senator Dill, Representative Schmansky, thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Let's take Ely, and then we'll take a break. How's that?
I'll be fast. The pizza's
Ely
waiting.
Ely
we don't want cold pizza, all of us. We've got like 20 people.
Mr. Mayor?
So the whole house made pizza, and it's up there waiting. Our side order of pizza. We don't want to eat it cold.
Mr. Mayor, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Madam Chair, thank you.
Mayor Scraba, go ahead.
Okay. I guess I got several talking points. One of them, the main reason I'm here is when we presented our request to the Senate committee, first and foremost, we had some stuff that we wanted included, and when it came back, it didn't. And the council authorized me to come back to here and ask you guys specifically to include part of it that wasn't included. And that being, like, if you look at on this, section 29, number
29. Page 29, section 29.
Page 29, section 29.
Okay. Thank you.
Wow. What we originally asked for was maintenance and improvement of city-owned property related to compliance with the American Disabilities Act, maintenance and improvement of city-owned property to increase energy efficiency, and maintenance and improvement to city infrastructure. And what came out of it was improvements for the community center, City Hall, Seamers Park, Whiteside Park related to the Americans with Disabilities Act, which we desperately need. That's for sure. The improvements to the rec center was just completed this year. It was finally done. So what we really need is improvements to the community center. The building was built in 1939. It's a regional hub. And I can't stress it enough. Our library's in there, our dance for weddings, stuff like that, which we don't have that much anymore because there's not an ADA access. The trail improvement and repairs, again, that's all regional. We would like to include that. But I would just, if I could, I would just like to, number two, either add improvements to the community center, because that's where the lion's share of our funding would go. It is a regional building. I can what I'd like to discuss a little bit about the city of Ely. We have 3,529 people. Town of Morris that surrounds us completely. Ely is 2.8 square miles. The town of Morris is completely surrounds us, and they have 1,600 people. The city of Ely, last number I've heard, our value of our property is about $190 million. The town of Morris is kicking $500 million. And obviously we're the regional hub, if you want to consider regional. There's no one else. Virginia is 50 miles away. Tower is only 300 people. Babbitt is a couple, 600, 500. So Isabella is only 100. So, you know, we don't have that many people. We're kind of this where everyone comes to shop, and I haven't even started talking about the tourism yet. I'm just talking about the people that live there that we supply. The community center that we have in our community supports all of these people. The city of Winton, that's where we go. Our library's in there. Earlier today, our numbers show that it's 50-50, 50% city residents, 50% either tourists or Town of Morris, City of Winton, City of Babbitt. We have free internet connections. A lot of people come there. We have a lot of books, Arrowhead Library System. Right now, today, coming here, I-35 was pretty much solid. One of the reasons I requested to be towards the end is it didn't pay for me to leave here any earlier because I would just get in the traffic that's heading up north. And I'm from Ely. One thing I cannot handle is your traffic. I just, no thank you. You know, and so I figured I'd let everyone here that wants to go home. I'm going to be late anyway, so it really doesn't matter. But I'm hoping not to catch that traffic up north. In a weird way, that traffic is good for us. It's what drives our summer businesses. And right now, it is our largest economy. And what we're looking for in the summer, we have approximately 700,000 people that come through Ely. And those are just, you know, guesses. We haven't figured out how to measure it exactly. We know it's more than 500,000, and we know it's less than a million. So our Chamber of Commerce has tried to get that number more accurate. But the sales tax that we're talking about, and Representative Marquardt talks about equalization. Ely's local government aid is 46% of our budget, of a 3.5% budget. We know that it's going to start going away. In 08, 09, and this year in 2010, we're going to lose, we will have lost $406,000 in local government aid. That number, and we're anticipating more. We don't know where. And I come to you and I ask you, if we are going to lose all of our local government aid, a sales tax will not solve the problem. I'm sorry, we don't have that much business to make up the LGA. It's because of the corporate limits of Ely, 2.8 square miles. That's all we have. A majority of the business that's done around Ely, we have a lot of retail, but the resorts and the outfitters are the ones that bring a lot of the people in. Yes, they come in to shop, but they stay at the hotel, at the resorts and hotels on the lakes. So that sales tax, that's not included in our what we're asking for is just the corporate limits of Ely. So it's not like we collect the sales tax from 700,000 people. And the numbers that we've gotten from the Senate Tax Committee are at a half percent. We're looking at trying to raise about $245,000 a year on a half percent. So they're a lot smaller. And Madam Chair, when you were talking about wealthy communities that have a lot of people, they're wealthy already and they get a sales tax and they become more wealthy. We're anything but wealthy, and I don't like saying that, but we just don't have a tax base. You know, our average home, our newest home might have been one or two last year. We've got a new development where we're getting 3-4 a year. Last year was pretty quiet. This year looks like we might get two more. A lot of them are move-ins. They don't stick build them. They just move them in on a trailer, put them down. And we're trying to get going. We're really looking at the mines. We're hoping that this legislature or the next one looks at the PolyMet project and gives it, as it goes through the process, supports it. We've learned Ely had a mine next to it till 1967. And I think that's when we started having our problems. When that mine left, there was no more corporation, big company like HTI to take care of us, to help put new sidewalks in, to help put new roads in, to help put a new swimming pool in the school, to do those sort of things. We don't have a big base industry. Tourism, and tourism, it doesn't have the same zip that manufacturing does or mining does. It doesn't have that cash flow. So I think about some of your comments, Madam Chair, about these things here. And I vacation in Jackson, Wyoming. I have I guide canoe trips, and one of my clients owns a home on the hill, and I'm very blessed and fortunate to be able to stay there. I also help pay for one of the rental places we go, and we pay 17% in taxes. It's Teton County. They're the ones that get you. It's not a city tax, but it's a county tax. And when you leave there, you're kind of like, wow, you know. And it's not a city tax. Again, it's Teton County. You know, you got Wilson and Jackson, and it's expensive to stay there. Lodging and sales tax. Do they give them the authority? To the best of my knowledge, I don't know. Obviously, you guys did the work, but I think counties, if you look at it different. And I went to North Dakota State University in Fargo, and I know their sales tax is fairly high, but they also have oil. You know, we have mining. Everyone gets subsidized differently. And equalization, Representative Marquardt, we spoke one day a little while ago. And I think we have to start. My idea of equalization is I'm surrounded by wealth. Our community is surrounded by people that come up for the weekend and use our water, use our sewer, use our roads, and then they leave. And we can't, you know, do we raise the price of everything? We don't have if we had the tax base to help offset it, I wouldn't be here saying, yeah, it's great, but our tax base is 1970s stock, 1960s stock. I'm at odds. But mainly what we're looking for, you know, obviously for approval also, is if we could include the improvements to the community center as a whole.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Representative Riddle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I've also visited Ely on bonding trips.
Yeah.
And just wondering if any of the projects that you're seeking help for with your request tonight are also funded by the bonding bill.
No. None. We did you guys are talking about wastewater. The city of Ely had a tertiary treatment plant. It was a model that the federal government put in. Didn't cost us that much money. But when it went down, when it started failing, and MPCA was writing us citations and saying, fix it or else, and we put $9 million in it, and we have PFA money, we had CDBG money, we had everything we could. We had to borrow money for 40 years on a 20-year plant. So we're going to be, after 2021, we're going to pay 20 more years on a plant that literally is out of date. But that was what we had to do back then. to get through it. We didn't come to the legislature and ask you for money because it's an enterprise fund. We're supposed to be able to generate. We're going to have trouble. There's no question. We've loved to take sales tax money and help pay that bond off, but it's already done and paid for, and that's not even on the table. We don't even want to discuss that. What we're looking at is if LGA keeps getting cut or if there's no equalization, we need at least our buildings ADA accessible, and we'd like the community center, which houses the library and acts as a community regional center for events, that can be funded from a sales tax that all the locals pay.
Any of the house research staff been to Ely fishing? Mr. Michael, been to Ely fishing? Most of the people in the room have probably been to Ely at one time or another. Anything else? Commissioner, ever been to Ely?
Chairman, my first time to Ely was when I became the Revenue Commissioner. And as you probably know, Senator Bach, is that it's undoubtedly our largest non-St. Paul located facility. And I believe that the mayor's predecessor told me we're the third largest employer in Ely.
Yes.
Behind the school district and the hospital.
And hospital.
And we're slated to add an additional
18.
Yep, 18 jobs. So
thank you.
We will be at about 100 employees by mid-June.
Right.
It's a great town.
And I have to applaud our employees. They're the ones that keep convincing you guys to bring them down there and everyone up here for bringing those jobs up there. They're absolutely to die for jobs in our community. There's people that want to move there and want to live there, and it helps our community a lot.
Mayor, it's the person with the most credit should go to Senator Johnson, because he was really the one who said, you know what, all the state employees for the Department of Revenue do not need to be located in the metropolitan area. I think they started with 13 employees up there.
Yep.
They call them the Baker's Dozen. And I think 7 of them are still up there working for the department. But it's just been a great success story for both, I think, the city of Ely, obviously, and for the Department of Revenue. And we'll just continue to grow that operation as much as we can within, when business dictates. And it's been just a great success story. And the interesting thing about it, I go up there when we hire new employees, and I usually go around the circle and ask them, where are you from? What brought you to this job? And it's amazing how many of them had moved away from that area, had grown, born and raised there, spent most of their formative years there, had moved away to the metropolitan area thinking of more economic opportunities. But when this opportunity came available, they chose to come back, whether to raise a family, settle down. And so it really is a great success story, and it's been a very successful operation for us.
Any other questions of the mayor, members? Mr. Mayor, thank you.
Yep.
You came the furthest.
That's fine. I would appreciate anything you guys can do. Again, my council, they asked me to come down here and try to get that included. Even if the bill gets included, I cannot stress it enough how much it would help our community. We have to keep this building going. It is the hub.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you very much.
Members, we're going to take a break to have something to eat here. I noticed on the league's list, is City of Detroit Lakes?
I don't think they're here.
They're not
nobody
here.
Nobody here, so we can take them up anytime.
Right.
They were
only a food and beverage tax in both
right.
proposals.
Well, the house has a lodging.
So when we get back, we'll take up... hopefully Senator Senjum will be here so we can talk about Rochester. I think we both have some of that. And then I think we will have something relative to Detroit Lake. So we'll try and get through that also. 9 o'clock, we're committee's recess till 9 p.m.